sounded like a sound from behind. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. I always think when we are in a spiritual environment, then naturally some things turn up, especially when we are, you know, just participating in programs like the Arati ceremonies or all these traditional ceremonies, or we take part in the lectures and so on. It seems that some things always come up, questions, sometimes also doubts. Srila Prabhupada once gave a poignant analogy of why things come up at all when we are in a spiritual process. He compared the process of spiritual life with making ghee. I think it is here where the contact is not so ideal. When you make ghee, you put butter into a pot and you apply heat to the pot, and the butter begins to become hot, and after some time it forms these ugly little either balls or something. It looks like fried varicose veins, you know. It looks a little bit eerie. And if you want the pure ghee to emerge, you have to scoop these off and throw them to the side. So when we are in spiritual life, there's also this period where all of a sudden things come up, maybe attachments or material desires, or even our weaknesses, our qualities like lust and greed and anger. They come up, they cannot hide any longer. They come from the bottom of our personality to the surface of our consciousness, and the result is always shock. I didn't think this is still there with me. I'm surprised that it is coming up. And at such times, a spiritualist or spiritual person has to be a little bit patient, a little bit understanding what is happening at the moment, and not become discouraged. So then we should to not become discouraged or bewildered. We always have these little sessions which we call Ishta Gostis, where we get together like here and where we can ask questions and give answers. By the way, two very special guests have just arrived. It is my beloved deities, Shishi Radha Kanaya Lal. I think some of you have seen them already. You are not disturbing, you are enhancing our... Oh, Sahil, you have God in your hand now. Krishna. So let us see. I know that Vinay has a whole list of questions, maybe 157. And Bhavesh might have some questions, and Shankar, and so on. So how should we do? I think, and you have questions. I think you just asked one by one. I think we should give Vinay the chance to open the question, and answer sessions, because he already did the introduction from the back of the book. Yes, Vinay. To answer this, I will give the way of the beginner and I will give the way of the accomplished spiritualist. When you begin your spiritual life, it's obviously important to concentrate fully on your discussions with others. And when you are at work and you're there before your computer on your table and there are 50 other people around you in that open office space and you go like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. It's obviously not extremely appropriate. So outside of these times, when you are able to give a good concentration, should you chant. But now for the advanced soul, actually always chants Krishna's name while he does his other work. It's always with him. It's like constantly echoing in him. And that happens when you chant for a longer amount of time. You will see actually that the name never leaves you, just like the breathing never leaves you. Also now, while you are listening to me, you are automatically continuing the in and exhale. So when you chant, when you are a little bit more accomplished, the chanting will always go on. It will always be there. Maybe some of you have made the experience if you have visited programs like the Kirtan Mela or the 24-hour kirtan in Birmingham. After you return from these prolonged chanting sessions, the holy name keeps on replaying itself in the mind, and you wake up in the morning and think, my God, I have sung the whole night. While my body was asleep, I was actually singing. And you feel incredibly happy because it seems the darkness of forgetfulness is gone. So on a more advanced level, this experience which I have discussed, the experience of automatic chanting keeps on going. There is a word for this. It is the anahata. I just took a little rest, so my memory is returning from the bed to me. But there is a word of chanting without consciously chanting. At that time, the holy name just stays with you like your breath stays with you. It is not something which you intentionally control or stop or so on. It happens like an echo, so to say. That's internally, Vinay. Only you hear it, not the neighbors around you. But the neighbors or the people who sit next to you feel is, my God, it's so nice to be next to this person. I don't know why, but he seems to exude a very pleasant atmosphere. Amazing, isn't it? It's like the echo of the chanting never leaves you. And that is when you are on a elevated stage. So in the beginning, you were asking, I think, more for the benefit of all of those who are now with us. You have a clearly marked time which you set aside from your other duties, and you make that your chanting time. You should do so in a secluded area, that means an atmosphere which is free from distraction, and continue your chanting there. And then also there is a time when you say, now I have completed my vow of chanting X number of rounds, and you set your bibek aside. At a more advanced stage, you never stop chanting. Yes, Krishna. Thank you. Shankar is next, yes? Yeah, thank you. This is a question which all of us had to address who are disciples of Srila Prabhupada. I remember that fateful evening. It was in a castle in center Germany. There was storm howling outside, and soon a storm would howl inside the castle. Our leader at that time took us into confidence. He sat on the stone floor of the castle and he broke the news. Prabhupada has left his body. You know, we were all about 60 monks and we couldn't believe it. For the next week, the storm in our hearts would not stop. I remember I was going from one room to the next. It had big rooms from here to the ceiling, and I didn't know what to do with my life. I had lost my leader, my spiritual leader, my spiritual master. How would I render service? How would I continue to learn from him? How would I receive guidance on my spiritual path, which was still was very young? And at that time I consulted the books and senior devotees, and I learned how to render service when the personality whom you want to render service to is not present, and how to learn when your teacher is absent. I learned the secret, and what it basically is, you serve his mission, what he would want you to do. You do that, and in this way, you are connected with him always. You feel his connection, and when you serve his mission, because he is not limited to time and space, he sometimes will appear to you and give you guidance. I remember at crossroads in my life having dreams of Srila Prabhupada, who would appear and give very concrete guidance. For instance, once I felt it was a little difficult for me as a Westerner, so creative, to always follow his orders. And I said to him, as we were walking through a forest, Prabhupada, how was it for you? Could you always follow the orders of your spiritual master? And he said, actually it was quite dramatic. He stopped, he came to a halt. I almost bumped into him because the forest path was so narrow that I walked a little behind him, but a little to the left. So he had poked his cane into the ground, and he has said, to follow the orders of the spiritual master is a life and soul of the disciple. It means it's the life force. To not follow means you give up the life force. No? So I remember when you follow the mission of a great soul, you feel connected to him and he is with you, next to you, and gives you guidance. That I know from my own experience. And now, as far as formal teachings are concerned, in the absence of your spiritual master, you should avail yourself of his talks, what he says. Like, I think this is one of the advantages modern technology brings to us. We can listen to recorded lectures and recorded instructions. And in this way, we can feel quiet together. It's mystical. See, in the material world, we only feel close to someone who sits close to us and whose breath we feel. In the spiritual dimension, we feel close to someone if we follow their instructions and guidance. Mm-hmm. It's not theoretical. Please try it. I sometimes even say I give these week-long retreats, and I say, based on the experience, I will be with you for the next months to come. You won't get rid of me so easily. And it's a fact, because they have listened to me so intensely and have gotten a lot of practical hints and guidance. They remember me as the facilitator of the retreat for many months to come. There was even once a theater play on this, where they would, switch the people who were on the retreat went home to their home houses and switched on the TV, and then all of a sudden I was in the TV talking to them through the TV. What they wanted to show is that one cannot forget this learning situation. Mm-hmm. There's our devotee. Then I will turn to the Matatis. Yes, please. Your good name again? Yash. The famous Yash. Well, the initial reaction to even doubts which come up after the initial Krishna enthusiasm has waned is to really make an effort to confront these questions. You should not just think, let me just ignore them, or let me go without the questions through my daily life. No, you should be bold enough to face these questions, to notice that they are there, and then come to others for clarification. That's why the association of devotees is usually necessary, because these things will come up, and at that time, those who have dealt with them in the past can give you very, very good advices how to become victorious over them. They can say, I also had this doubt and I was experiencing this. I asked this person to give me an answer and I was satisfied with the answer, or I was dissatisfied with the answer, and I kept on asking more questions. I think the worst thing which we do is when doubts or questions haunt us, we just ignore them, almost as if they were ghosts who will go when the daylight dawns, when sun rises. But no, doubts will not leave you when the sun rises. Doubts only leave you when they are answered to your full satisfaction. And sometimes we feel hesitant. Oh no, if I ask this question, everyone thinks I'm I'm a faithless idiot. You know, we feel like this. But you can be rest assured, Yash, everyone who's seriously on the path will not only meet the bright sides of his personality, he will meet Mr. Hyde as well. Do you know that novel, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? We all have a Mr. Hyde in us. Now, in the novel, it was very nicely said, Dr. Jekyll was a well-meaning doctor who took care of his patients. But he decided, he had all these evil tendencies. He sometimes wanted to go to his maidservant and you know, dare I say, spend a romantic hour with her, you know, and he had all these, sometimes he wanted to slap someone in the face, you know, he felt he had this, and he thought to himself, if I could only separate these bad sides, these weak sides of my nature from the good side, I would be permanently good. Permanent doctor. So he began to experiment with medicines and drugs, and then finally had a brewed together a drink, and when he drank it, and sat before the mirror, his face contorted, hair grew where hair is not supposed to grow, on the nose and everywhere, He turned before his very eyes into a monster, Mr. Hyde, who escaped through the back door of his house and went into the underground scene of London, where he did all kinds of criminal activities. Now, after some time, and then in the morning, that Mr. Hyde returned and transformed the bed into the good old Dr. Jekyll, and he was treating the patients, and he felt very happy with himself. I am now very good. The bad side in me has had its fill in the night, and during the day I'm very good. But after some time, it didn't work any longer. This outbreak of Mr. Hyde, or this transformation into the evil monster, happened without his control, and he came into very bad situations and finally died. That is the sad story of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So we all have a Mr. Hyde inside, and he won't go if we take a juice or so. He will keep on bothering us for quite some time, and the only way to dissolve him is to you know, discuss what is happening in us, to ask questions and to hear about the remedial measures. Thank you, Josh. I will now turn towards the Matajis for a while, but please keep your question in your mind. I will come back to you. Remember, you I have seen you many times. Would you be so kind to give your name? Palika. Palika, yes, I remember Palika.
My question was that thing that Yash asked. Yeah.
You know, when it thinks like anger or so, it sometimes let it pass without paying too much attention to it. It's just like a bad smell which comes from the pipe which goes to the behind, you know, you just let it go. You don't make a big discussion about it and don't publicize an article when it has escaped you the bad smell. No, it's the mind will have its ways, and it will. It's sometimes normal that some anger gets released, like these embarrassing fragrances which leave our bodies through the bagpipe. You know, what to do? This is the moment you pay attention to these bad qualities, they even can become worse. I want to tell you something which is so good. It comes from spiritual psychology. Once Lord Krishna went with Balaram and Satyaki on a journey through the forest, and they came to the desolated area where they needed to take the rest because it was quite late. And then they decided to have night guards. The first night guard was given to Satyaki, the second to Balaram, and the third to Krishna himself. So Satyaki was staying there with his sword, a little bit separate from Krishna and Balaram, who were already resting and sleeping. And all of a sudden, he heard a noise from the forest, and he saw with his own eyes a terrible demon coming out of the forest and coming over him. He started to fight, and the demon said to him, "Listen to me. You either give me, let's make a deal. If you don't say anything, I will eat your two friends. But if you want to stop me, I will kill you first, eat you then, and then eat your first, eat your friends. So, what would you like?" Satyaki was a proper warrior. He jumped with his sword into action and began to attack the demon. But they were fighting and fighting and fighting, and finally the demon got over, you know, pushed him to the ground and knelt on his chest, and was so terrible that he was just baring his fangs to get to the, what is it called, this vein, to this the jugular vein. Yes, he got, but when Satyaki was already feeling it's over, when he felt the fangs of the demon on his jugular vein, the demon disappeared. Satyaki thought, was it all a dream? And he walked over and awoke Balaram, whose turn came next. Balaram, but he didn't tell him. So Balaram was there sitting and in the night, and all of a sudden he sees the demon, and he says, "Listen, I will either kill you first and then eat your two sleeping friends, or you just move aside and let me eat your friends immediately. What would you prefer?" Balaram got up out his club and began to fight that demon. But no matter how strong that demon fought, the demon's strength increased more and more and more. Until finally Balaram, who had never been defeated by anyone before, lay on the ground, waiting for the deathly blow of his opponent. But again, the demon disappeared. Balaram thought, "I must have been dreaming. I mean, it's also impossible that someone wins the upper hand on me." So he went to wake Krishna up, whose last guard came. "Let me tell you how Krishna dealt with the problem. It's the only way which is successful." Krishna was sitting there. All of a sudden, the demon came, making the same immoral proposal. You just move aside and let me eat your two friends. Krishna just laughed. As he laughed at the demon shrunk. Finally, he was that small. Krishna took him and rolled him up in his dhoti. This is how you can, you know, things like money or little demons can be kept on the side of the dhoti. Then morning came, and Satyaki and then Balaram awoke, and they said to Krishna, "Did you also have an unexpected night guest?" Krishna said, "Whom do you mean?" "Well, there was someone coming out of the forest," said Satyaki, "who came to me with an immoral suggestion that I should watch as he was killing and eating you. I became so angry that I jumped at him, but no matter how much I fought and my anger grew, the demon grew also and gave me a terrible time. But I thought it was just a dream." Balaram said, "I have the same experience. My God, he grew in strength as my anger grew." So then Krishna smiled and he went like this, "Is it him?" And there was a little demon standing like this. "Yes, exactly, but he was much taller." Krishna said, "You know who this is?" "No," they said, "this is anger. The more you pay attention to anger, the more he grows until he gets your upper hand. You need to laugh into the face of your anger and dissolve him in this way." It's a very interesting point, isn't it? If you have anger and you just dwell on it and you just anger, and this person is totally unqualified in to do his what he does, and you allow your anger to grow just by dwelling on it, and as a result, the anger becomes impossible to deal with and very, very difficult to manage. So some of our psychological things we should just ignore. Others we should confront. And to know the difference takes intelligence. Yes, your good name, please.
Sam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dreams come from an area of our personality which is not often known to us. It's the subconsciousness, the unconsciousness. And they stay there, or they come from there, and they are often messengers from there who have a certain message to give to us. Like when you have repeated dreams of finding yourself in extremely fearful situations. I think we call them nightmares, reoccurring nightmares. It means there's something in your life where you are deadly afraid of, and you need to solve that. So dreams come as messengers from the subconscious area in our life, and they come to our consciousness, and they often carry important messages which we need to pay heed to. I would like to give you an example. Let us say a man wants to study and complete his university career. But in the middle, he meets a woman, and they are first friendly and then intimate with each other. And then the woman decides, I need some security here. I better we better have a child. And she somehow sets up a situation where she conceives a child. So the man feels betrayed by her. Now there's a child, now I have to interrupt my university studies and go to work to maintain our small family. I'm constructing a situation. Now all this, he is never comfortable with this woman, because he always feels subconsciously that she cheated me and destroyed all my possibilities in life. I wanted to travel and see the world, but I wanted to study, and now I have to just slave away in this shoe shop where I sell shoes to the stinky feet of the Londoners. You know, I feel very much betrayed. So he always swallows this, and in his marriage, he is always angry and resentful. And one day, he has a dinner with his wife. The wife says, "Oh, you didn't earn enough money. Oh, you didn't supply an education. Oh, you didn't." And he says, "And you never ever cared for me." He takes out a knife, puts it into her belly, and murders her. That was. And afterwards he thinks, my God, what happened to me? I'm a civilized person. Why did this thing come over me and I became so violent? It was because deep in his subconsciousness, he always carried that resentment, that hate towards this person, because maybe 20 years ago, 15 years ago, there was a child and he felt lured into this. So dreams, in order to avoid it, are sometimes messengers. And I think this person would have dreamt often of the wide world and of making trekkings through the Himalayas, of things which symbolized freedom. But he didn't observe his dreams, and he didn't know that, I should have maybe, within the situation in which I am, looked for opportunities for freedom. There's another sort of dreams, Sam, and they are very different from dreams as a messenger of the subconsciousness. These dreams, Sam, are spiritual dreams, where you all of a sudden dream of yourself separating from the world of illusions. You see yourselves maybe as a monk dressed in a dhoti like me. They are almost prophetic dreams of your spiritual future. Also, there are dreams where we see our spiritual teacher, our spiritual master, appear in our mind and give us instructions. These are dreams which are very, very good. Well, we could write a whole dream book about this, but I think for now. Then, Sam, there are dreams. There is a whole book about it. Do you know the dream book? There's a dream book in Swapna something. It's about when you have bad dreams, they are often foretelling a future event. There's a science to know. When you have a real bad dream, you can tell me and I can analyze it for you. when you see yourself naked on top of a hill, smearing yourself with red oil, you know, then it could mean that you are a few days before your death. I hope you don't have such wild dreams. Yes. Hare Krishna. Yes. What is your good name?
My name is Kasrael.
Kasrael. Kesara. This is a wonderful name coming from the unknown section of names. I have never heard this. Yes, Kasrael.
So I was told you were born to Catholic parents. That's correct. And I assume there was some expectation that you should become a Christian.
Mm-hmm. And yes, correct.
You had some kind of attraction towards spiritual life or leading a life of love. But even then, there are lots of religions which sort of lead to this lifestyle, Buddhism, many different kinds of Hinduism. And I was just wondering, so among the broad plethora of religions which are out there, even besides things like Islam, Christianity, but just looking at the spiritual religions, how did you manage to choose Hare Krishna? What is the selection process of finding the right religion?
Good, very good question. Yes, I was a practicing Christian even. I remember there are pictures of me during Christian marriages where I would go with a little girl which looked like an angel. I was the he angel and she the she angel. We would go before the young couple and strew flowers, you know. I was often asked to perform this function in our church because I looked like a little angel. That's what everyone said. I can't. It must be somewhere. I saw a picture recently. Yes. Why did I choose, or what helped me to choose Krishna consciousness as my path? I can only say it was a certain calling first, which turned into a certitude that this is your path. And the way I got certitude is by really three things which turned up. I had some profound spiritual experiences on this path, which I did not have on my Christian path, and I started to change in ways which I was never able to foretell. Haribol Ram, you are all the time with us. Thank you for giving us the pleasure of your company. Thank you. So. Can you understand my English, or is it unclear? He manages?
Yeah.
Amazing. So I had these symptoms, and after some time, I also developed something which I was not able to develop before. I was actually able to give up certain bad habits which I had. So later, I learned that on the spiritual path, or the spiritual path is just like eating. When you eat, you feel first some nourishment, then you feel some satisfaction, and then you feel the relief of all traces of hunger. So in this way, I also felt some bhakti first, some devotional experiences, and then I felt some symptoms of great spiritual happiness, and finally I lost actually attachment to my own bad habits, which I really had tried to give up at times, but I was not successful. And then I knew that my calling, try this, you know, this type of calling, had turned into certitude. I had results which convinced me that this is my own true path. And I would request you also to make an experiment in Krishna consciousness. Try the process and then look out for these symptoms. There should be a deep devotional or spiritual satisfaction in you. There should be some symptoms, some deep joy. And then you should be able to change in such a way that those things which you maybe want to also get rid of, character traits, or maybe you are, I know that you are not, but let us say you would have a difficulty with drinking. Some people have this, they can't say no to the spirit in the bottle. Usually one leaves these things behind in a natural way, just like someone who eats says, I'm full, I have no interest, and even one bite more. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Krishan?
Krishan, mm-hmm. This is a very good question. I think the biological impulse is to live a self-reliant life, independent from the parents, comes in a certain teenager, a phase of teenager things. All teenagers feel, sorry, Mom, I'm sorry, Pa. Father, I have to live my own life now. But that it may not always be the best time to move on, because we may still need their guidance, or it may be appropriate to take their guidance. I think that the time when you do decide on your own comes when you are absolutely sure what you want to do, not just a revolt against the parental authority, but if you absolutely are sure, this is my path now, and I have seen several confirmations. But even then, when you leave the nest of your parents, the protected home, so to say, I would always request you to keep a respectful attitude towards the parents. After all, they have given us this very precious human form of life, which is an excellent vehicle for spiritual practice, and we should keep a respectful and a kind nature, even if we have to fly on our own. Yes. What is your good name, if I may know?
Rahu.
Rahu. Rahu. Rahul. Oh God. Yes. Rahul. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Stopping your devotion, and no matter how much time you sit down, then you, and you say, all right, I'm going to try and chant one more round, or one more round, it still comes up to you. And you have to like wait for a certain time till your problems decrease, so you can have that pure devotion again. How do you overcome that, like, that specific situation?
You have asked a very good question. Rahul, I would like to answer in an unexpected way. I totally can empathize with you when it comes to this situation that sometimes life throws things at us where we just can't be concentrated, even though we try. It's just so, we feel so unfair what happened to us or what happened to others, or we are ill and diseased and maybe we got a note, it is from the university, which means you have to repeat this whole course again, and it's something which upsets us and therefore keeps us from being concentrated on our spiritual practices. But I would not now say that we should leave the spiritual practices for that time where we are upset and put them to the side. I think this is now the time where we should try as good as we can to take shelter. A man's quality or a man's heart will be shown where does he take shelter at the time of difficulties, in the material or in the spiritual world, or with material things or spiritual people. I think Krishna wants to see that even in the midst of the versus difficulties, we take shelter and look for solution from him only. So that is part of the testing process of spiritual life, that we learn to take proper shelter. I really don't think it is good if we wait, because difficulties will come rolling into your life. My spiritual master once gave a very nice example of a fisher boat on the bank of the ocean. If a fisher would wait until the waves stop rolling onto the beach, he would never be able to push his boat into the ocean, never, because there are always waves. I have been in Mumbai at the beach called Juhu Beach, and I saw these fishers, they always had to fight against the waves and to push their boat into the ocean. So this, I think, is life. There will be many waves in your life who come at you, and you have to somehow keep on course and push your way through the waves and then come into the peaceful sea. Peace will not be there if you wait for peace. Peace will come if you go through the obstacles and then you come into an area where there is no disturbance any longer. So yes, at the beginning it may be a little difficult, but I want to tell you from the experience of many spiritual people that if you take shelter and continue to chant or read, after some time your chanting, it gets even more power, more intensity, more pointedness when you keep on going. It's like it slowly comes together and you slowly become quite focused and directed. I have seen difficulties have in the beginning often been overwhelming for me, but after some time they became my biggest friends in my spiritual life. Friends which pointed me away from the false hope to become happy in this world and pointed me towards Krishna, Krishna's lotus feet. But if you stop as with your spiritual practice, as soon as a wave of difficulty rolls over you, then what is that? Where is your persistence? Where is your determination? Where's your faith, even if you give up immediately? That's my experience. Yes, yes, the orange voice. That sounds so good, you know. The orange voice. Kitchen and Ram also go. You were cooking already, Ram, or? Oh, your cooking comes now? Now the little Ram will cook, yes. Dinner, I think, isn't it? Yes. So have a good cooking experience, my dear. Voice of the orange color. Hare Krishna. How long do we go with the rest of the session? I think we do a few more minutes or... Maybe we should just stay together for 15 more minutes and then... how do we say then? Call it a day. Yes, Manohar, is there something you want to... I'm sorry?
Mother Vananda was trying to reach you. And he is at Purushottam's place in Antwerp for another half an hour. And then he is going to Holland to this place, but he will be there only after 8, and you cannot reach him anymore.
For another half an hour, yes, I can. How can I call him? Would you mind to stay 15 minutes? Is it possible, or is it in? Yeah. What wonderful questions! Yes, yes, please. Your good name, Mira. I have seen you also several times, Mira. Yes, please. Yes.
And this is the reason that we are putting into Sarah in our mind ourselves. And in the same way, I shouldn't give up too many things at once because my mind might rebel.
You shouldn't give up too many things at once, yeah.
And a lot of the time we make justifications for that reason. So we say we're not going to stop doing this right now because our mind might rebel and we don't want to give up too many things in terms of.
Yes, yes, yes.
And how do you draw the line between unnecessary
sex education
and just
the line that is sometimes difficult to draw. That is not an easy question, Mira, which you have posed today. There are two things come to mind about where to draw the line between unnecessary austerities and just giving up on austerities and wallowing in your comfort zone. You know, there are some goals in our life which we can reach only if we put on in a certain amount of austerity. Like, for instance, when you want to study something, you have to sit down and prepare yourself until you are able to pass the examination test. It's an austerity which is absolutely necessary. But then there are some things which you say, I better let it go. I don't continue with this austerity. And these, the scriptures give us one tip. They say you should study for which austerities are you suited? What is appropriate for you? For instance, I would like to give an example which is very much in the mind of young girls. For women, it is natural to be together with men, you know, and be married eventually. And to be alone is just an unnecessary austerity. And to sometimes women think, oh, let me be alone, let me be a sannyasini, let me take on this austerity for Krishna. But this would be an inappropriate austerity. Or let us give another example. Some people can fast very nicely. They don't eat breakfast, but only one meal a day. But if you see, your body is just requires a regular or three meals a day, then you should keep to the three meals. It's called, what we do is yukta vairagya, appropriate renunciation, not inappropriate. And what is appropriate or what is inappropriate? Appropriate is that which helps you to pursue your Krishna consciousness. I remember once Prabhupada had a disciple, and he would always, in the early days, he would cook himself and he would give this disciple chapatis, and the disciple would always eat a minimum of 20 chapatis. That's a lot to cook. And other god brothers were complaining, who ate only 3 chapatis. This Striyadish was his name, is just eating chapatis like an elephant eats chapatis. But Prabhupada then protected this disciple by saying, yeah, but he works like an elephant also. For him it is appropriate. For you who are just translating things or doing other things, it would be inappropriate to eat so much. It would put you into the graveyard most probably. 20 chapatis. How much do you eat, Vinay? 4 maybe, or 5, yeah, but not 20. Bhavesh, how much do you eat in one meal? 4, yes, 4 or 5, yeah, not 20. But if there is a requirement for 20 chapatis, then it would not be inappropriate to try to eat. So it's appropriate renunciation. Sorry, I've got bewildered by the many unknown faces here. What helps you in Krishna consciousness, and what absolutely doesn't help you? I think the question is also about sleep. You know, some of us, when they get up at 2 o'clock, they are rosy, fresh, and so other. Whereas others, when you get up at 2 o'clock, you can just bring a person who has a stretcher, and they can carry you into your bed. You're so useless. Hare Krishna. Whatever helps in spiritual life. It's not so much, Krishna consciousness is not so much what you do and don't do in the external field. It's how do you serve Krishna, and what is your consciousness. And for that, for serving Krishna and for keeping in good consciousness, we live accordingly. Bhavesh? I would recommend you who are beginning your spiritual life to not have so many rounds, but have more reading. Why? Reading and hearing about Krishna gives us an understanding of sambandha. Sambandha means an understanding of who we are, what is our relationship to the world, and what is our relationship to God. And only when you chant with the knowledge of that relationship will your chanting be fruitful and reach the goal. I want to give you an example from bow shooting. Only when you need to have a clear concept where's the aim, and then take aim, and then the arrow will go into the aim. Chanting is in some ways like a bow, and you are like the arrow. If you chant, the bow will transport you, or the mantra will transport you like an arrow which is transported by the bow. But this will, it will transport you to the goal where you focus your consciousness upon. I had been introduced in the art of bow shooting, and first of all, when I started, because I didn't know how to take aim, the arrows came sent back from Africa, you know, they went all over the place, not to the aim. I'm joking, I'm trying to say they didn't hit the aim. So when you chant, you must, just like a bowman needs to know where is the goal, where's the target, you must be aware of Radha and Krishna and of yourself. If you are not, and you just mumble the mantra without this background knowledge, you are like a bowman who shoots an arrow without an understanding of the target. So at the beginning of your spiritual career or your spiritual evolution, I would really suggest to read a lot and hear a lot and chant, you know, maybe, I don't know how much time you have, but let us say 2/3 of your time reading and listening to lectures, and 1/3 of the time chanting the mantra. And then later you can change by half of the time which you have for chanting and half for hearing and accumulating knowledge through reading. But in the beginning, it's very important. It's very important. I see this a lot in our movement, where we have now, by Krishna's mercy, a lot of chanting, but devotees still do not always read sufficiently and then develop unnecessary doubts and do not know about their goal in life. Okay, we come to the last question of this evening. Let us see. Hare Krishna, please tell me your good name again. Mahadeep. Yes, I visited your home, isn't it? Yes, yes, Mahadeep.
I'm just trying to think of Krishna, Krishna. Sahirji, maybe we should not now, but this needs some serious
technical attention. this wiring here. So Mahadeep, you are asking, okay, I understand, I should take shelter even in the midst of difficulties in Krishna's lotus feet. But how do I come to this plane where I overcome illusion and bewilderment and disappointment or whatever, and anxiety, and then surrender really? I can give you a good tip which has helped many, many devotees. There are some very good prayers. They are the Sharanagati prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Oh, Mahadeep, they are so real and so good. And by just praying them, or one of them, you will come to that devotional space where you can take shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. I have seen this time and again happening. This amazing guidance through authorized prayers. It's really, you know, you say only one of these prayers and all of a sudden you feel in that devotional space where you also wish to take shelter. I recommend that when you come home to London, you purchase one of these books. If you are poor, you can even ask me for Lakshmi. You know, that is good to do. This is very good. It's like, you know, when a car doesn't drive, then you push it and you go like, and then you do something like a jump start. It's called a jump start. You know, you push the car with manpower and then you put the gear in and press the I'm not a driver, but something like a gas pedal, and then in the winter we often do that. So prayers is also jump-starting you in devotion. You take the devotional strengths of someone else, that is the person who has composed this prayer which you are reading now, and after some time you get jump-started. You feel genuine emotions in your heart also. I think Krishna consciousness is a lot of about jump-starting us, because this is what happens in good association. We also derive a lot of strengths from the people we are associating with during these good associations. Yeah? Now I have looked at the clock and I have a commitment to phone someone. Very important, and I thank you so much for this session. It would be my great joy if we meet again during this summer retreat here in Radhadesh. For further questions, if you have questions, don't hesitate to stop me when you see me shooting by like a rocket somewhere. And I see most of you this evening, I think around 7:30, we have a wonderful session here about the second part of the Tree of Life. I think it's good if you come, because there's some good instructions for you, and you will get something which you can take home to London. So I thank you very much. I wish you a wonderful time here. Enter. Hare Krishna.
Krishna, Krishna. I will just zoom off.
It's just dodgy. It's not